Jim Fetzer, who is delighted to be here, a guest hosting on the Power Hour. I am a huge fan of Joyce Riley, and I'm very delighted that Kate brought me back for another show with you. I want to begin with the death of Donald Rumsfeld at 88. Many of you may think Donald Rumsfeld was a good guy. He was not. He was served both as the youngest Secretary of Defense in our history, but also as the oldest. Some may recall that on 9/10, the day before 9/11, Donald Rumsfeld announced that the Pentagon had lost track of $2.3 trillion from its budget. The controller of the Pentagon, the chief financial officer at the time, was Dov Zakheim, who was not only a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen, but also a rabbi. And I have scant doubt about where all that money went. Now, this is an occasion for telling you what happened here, because Rumsfeld's role was very significant. Well, I believe he, along with Dick Cheney, were the American counterparts of Olmert and Bibi Netanyahu of Israel, who appeared to have been the brain trust behind 9/11. Now, some of you know I am a professional philosopher of science, and I've been applying scientific reasoning to sort out complex and controversial events like JFK, 9/11, Wellstone, Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing. Scientific reasoning has four stages. Puzzlement, something doesn't fit into your background knowledge and experience. Speculation, what are the possible alternative explanations of what has taken place? Adaptation, what are the probabilities of the available evidence on the alternatives, especially, and this is an indispensable step, when you have sorted out the real evidence from the fabricated or fake? Explanation, when the evidence is settled down, we are entitled to accept the best supported hypothesis as true in the tentative and fallible fashion of science. Fallible in the sense that even the best supported hypothesis might turn out to be false. Tentative, with the access to more information and alternative hypotheses, we may have to revise our position, reject hypotheses we previously accepted, accept hypotheses we previously rejected. Now, I'm going to give you a thumbnail sketch of 9/11 and explain where you can find substantiation for every point I make. What was puzzling about 9/11? Well, we had reports of hijackers alive the following day. There were buildings that did not appear to collapse, even though we were told they had collapsed. There was missing debris at all four of the crash sites. There was no plausible explanation for the attack. We're talking about four different flights, commercial carriers. Flight 11, which allegedly hit the North Tower, was a Boeing 767 out of Logan in Boston with only 92 of 351 passengers aboard. Flight 77, a Boeing 757 out of Dulles with only 64 out of 289 passengers aboard. Flight 93, another Boeing 757 out of Newark with 45 out of 289 aboard. And fourth but not least, Flight 175, another Boeing 767 out of Logan with 65 out of 365 passengers aboard. Now, you may notice these planes were only like 25% full, in fact, even less. And how is it possible that a company, a commercial carrier like American or Delta, could remain in business if they're flying transcontinental with their planes practically empty? Meanwhile, then, consider the alternatives. Hypothesis one, The attack was real and carried out by 19 Islamic terrorists under the control of a guy in a cave in Afghanistan, or H2. The attack was fake and evidence was fabricated to pull the wool over the eyes of the American people. Let's begin with what happened in Shanksville. If a Boeing 757 had crashed there, we would expect to find evidence of the crash. But it's not there. If there's an absence of debris, what are we to infer? That no plane crashed there. What are the probabilities? That a commercial carrier or large plane crashed and left no debris, or that we're being spun a yarn? Similarly, what happened at the Pentagon? If a Boeing 757 had crashed there, we would again expect to find evidence of the crash. But if you look at the crash site on the ground floor, there's a hole about 10 by 17, but there's no massive pile of aluminum debris from a 100-ton airliner. No bodies, no seats, no luggage, no wing, no tail. Not even the engines were recovered. If there's an absence of debris, what are we to infer? Then no plane crashed there again. What are the probabilities? And this, of course, remember, was the command and control center where Donald Rumsfeld was in charge. If no plane hit the Pentagon, obviously Donald Rumsfeld knew that was the case. Meanwhile, evidence was planted. The most conspicuous piece of wreckage on the Pentagon lawn, which only showed up about 45 minutes later after the initial hit, came from a crash site near Cali, Colombia, where a 757 crashed in 1995. It appears some of the plane parts were dropped from a C-130 circling the Pentagon at the time, because we have plenty of photographs showing the clear green Pentagon lawn completely undamaged with no debris whatsoever. Meanwhile, the official account is a fantasy. This is supposed to be Flight 77 for executing an incredibly difficult approach, circling to hit the Pentagon on the ground floor. And yet, the purported pilot, Hani Hanjour, could barely fly a Cessna. More importantly, the alleged trajectory of a Boeing 757 barely skimming the ground at over 400 miles an hour turns out to be aerodynamically impossible. A 757 at that altitude and speed could not got closer than 60 or even 80 feet to the ground, where 80 feet is higher than the Pentagon at 71 feet is tall. When we turn to who could have planned 9/11, Bibi Netanyahu held a major conference in Jerusalem on terrorism in the late 1980s, and published a book about it before the West was aware of any threat. In other words, they were going to conjure up a threat. Israel had the motive to want to use U.S. forces to destroy the modern Arab states that served as a counterbalance to its domination of the Middle East, and eventually to confront the Persian nation of Iran. In fact, Wesley Clark at the Commonwealth Club of California in San Francisco on the 3rd of October 2007 explained that the plan was to attack seven countries in the next 5 years. Precisely the agenda that the Israelis preferred. This had nothing to do with the motives or intentions of the United States, but putting the U.S. military at the disposal of Israel. So what happened in New York? Well, the Twin Towers were marvels of engineering. They had a robust tube within a tube design. There were 47 massive core columns in the center, but 230 external steel support columns, which were connected by steel trusses filled with 4 to 8 inches of concrete. Now, since the building were 208 feet on a side, that meant each floor consisted of an acre of concrete on a steel slab connected at one end to the massive core columns, at the other to the external steel support columns, which were quite formidable in and of themselves. The New York Port Authority transferred the World Trade Center to Silverstein Properties, the first time it had been in private ownership just 6 weeks prior to 9/11, where he hired the security firm that had been conducting security since it opened in 1907 and hired an Israeli firm, as well as negotiated new insurance coverage, where it just happens that Larry Silverstein is a close personal friend of Bibi Netanyahu. They have phone calls every Sunday. And when he negotiated the new coverage, he added an anti-terrorist provision so that because there were allegedly two planes, he claimed double indemnity and collected $4.5 million on a $114 million investment. I mean, the situation is staggering. They don't call this guy Lucky Larry for nothing. Among other 9/11 oddities, there were no evidence of hijackers having boarded any planes. The hijacker passports were issued by the CIA. As I've mentioned already, Rumsfeld announced the missing $2.3 trillion on 9/10. The controller, Dov Zakheim, was a dual U.S.-Israeli citizen. Moreover, it appears that Rumsfeld directed the section chief to bring all the records for the missing $2.3 trillion into the West Wing, which had recently been reinforced, the only wing in the Pentagon to undergo that reinforcement, with all the records and documentations, which meant the wing was largely bereft of personnel and property, apart from the section chief and his assistants, the accountants and budget experts. Well, when I read the casualty list from the Pentagon of 125 purported, it included three dozen of these experts, accountants, and budget analysts. Meanwhile, a global hawk, an unmanned aerial vehicle, fired a missile into the West Wing and killed all these guys and destroyed the records. Think about it. How could that be coincidental? Meanwhile, what's up with the North Tower? If a Boeing 767 had crashed there, we would expect to find evidence of the crash. The video evidence is this very unusual French film crew called the Naudet brothers just swung the camera up to catch what looked like a flying pig. Let me mention, by the way, to give you a clue of how outrageous this is, it was filmed on Duane Street. Duane Street, and if you take D-U-A-N-E-S-T and rearrange it, you get Naudet Brothers. This is rubbing our noses in it. We have an impossible entry because the plane was intersecting with seven floors. A real plane could not have entered intersecting seven floors that represented an acre of concrete apiece. Think about what happens when a commercial carrier encounters a bird in flight that weighs only a few ounces. In addition, there was a collection of Israelis who entered the country as art students and were known as a gelatin group in the North and the South Tower. They were even doing performance art external to the building and appeared to have played a role, I believe, in creating the cookie-cutter-like cutouts on the sides of the building. What about the South Tower? Well, we have some 52 videos, and they show an aerodynamically impossible speed at that altitude. Those carrying this out weren't rocket scientists, and they appear to have taken the cruising speed of a 767 at 35,000 feet and assumed it could have happened the same at 700 or 1,000 feet, where the air is three times more dense, which means that instead of being able to suck the air through the turbines, they begin to function as brakes. In fact, pilots for 9/11 Truth have produced a brilliant documentary on 9/11 entitled 9/11 Intercepted, and they show that at that speed and altitude, a Boeing 767 would have physically come apart. Moreover, you see the plane simply disappear into the building. Actually, it passes its whole length into the building in the same number of frames it passes its whole length through air, which is a physical absurdity unless a massive 500,000-ton steel and concrete building poses no more resistance to the trajectory of an aircraft in flight than air. Think of throwing an empty beer can against a stone wall. What's going to happen? Clue, it ain't going to pass through. Meanwhile, there's no aircraft debris beneath the facade of either the North or the South Tower. And while the planes would have crumbled external to the building, body, seats, luggage, wings, tail, falling to the ground, it wasn't there. But there was an engine found at Church and Murray Streets that was planted. It was antiquated. Again, they fumbled the ball here. They didn't carry it out right. So how was it done? Well, the facades with their cookie-cutter cutouts, I'm suggesting, was done by the gelatin group. They had hundreds of little fuse holders, which I believe to hold small charges to set up a pattern to make it look like planes had hit there, except when you do a close-up. There are no parts of any planes there. They actually were not created by planes. But then what about the appearance of the plane? Since we're talking about physically impossible events, we know this cannot have been done with real, physical, commercial carriers. It was fake. So how was it done? Could it have been done with CGI, computer-generated images? Could video compositing have done it? Could the images of the planes have been added after the original footage was taken in a 17-second gap between the original filming and broadcast? Could it have been done with holograms? That may sound far out, but when you put the evidence together, the impossible speed, the impossible entry, the fact that it turns out there's radar data, but not for the plane we see in all the videos, but for a plane some 1,200 feet to its right, which appears to have been projecting the image of the plane, where I was even sent a page from an Australian military manual for an airborne holographic projector. That appears to be how it was done. Well, a fellow named Richard Hall did what he calls his Flight 175 3D radar study. Check it out. This is completely brilliant work. Now, you may have heard of no planes theory. That really is a conjunction of four different claims. Not that no planes were involved at all, since we all thought we saw the planes in New York, and where a plane did fly toward the Pentagon and then swerve over it. No plane theory is the conjunction of the following four claims. Flight 11 did not hit the North Tower. Flight 77 did not crash into the Pentagon. Flight 93 did not crash into Shanksville. And Flight 175 did not hit the South Tower. In fact, it's fascinating. Pilots for 9/11 Truth tracked both Flight 93 from Shanksville and found it was over Champaign-Urbana, Illinois, after it had officially crashed, and also Flight 175, and discovered it was over Harrisburg and Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, after it had allegedly hit the South Tower, where I obtained Federal Aviation Administration records showing that the planes, the actual physical aircraft used for those two flights, were not formally deregistered or taken out of service until 28 September 2005. Indeed, it turns out that flights 11 and 77 were not even in the air that day. If you want to find the proof, I'm going to tell you where. So what happened at the World Trade Center? There were explosions in the sub-basements of the towers that were intended to be coordinated with the hit impacts of the planes, but they actually set off 14 and 17 seconds before the alleged impact. The falling jet fuel was supposed to explain them. They were draining the water from the fuel systems and the sprinkler system more when we return from this break. We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
I don't know where to start. There's so many products you guys offer. I think one of the first things I ever ordered from you guys was your clay. The clay is miraculous. I could not do without that. And the charcoal, you know, you can get yourself in a bathtub to kind of help take the toxins out. So just those two alone, but I could go on to the Octavita Silver Lozenges. Of course, then the Oregaresp and the P73, the oil of oregano, and your Vitamir toothpaste. Again, I could go on and on and on.
Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.
Hi, this is Catherine at the Power Hour. The Power Mall began when Joyce Riley discovered an all-natural soap that heals skin issues and can replace your bathing, laundry, and household cleaning products. That soap is Miracle 2 and is made from natural minerals and coconut extract with no added fragrances or colors and is naturally concentrated and biodegradable. I guarantee after you discover how amazing Miracle 2 products are, you'll recommend them to everyone you know. To order, call 877-817-9829 or visit thepowermall.com today. You'll learn why so many people say, it's not just soap, it's a miracle.
Hi, this is Power Hour J. We've been spring cleaning at the Power Mall. We have an overstock of Grown by Nature supplements, and we'd like to offer you 25% off of select products. Hurry, the sale will only be available while supplies last. No code necessary to shop at thepowermall.com. Or you can call Jay at 877-817-9829. That's thepowermall.com or 877-817-9829. Boost your immune system naturally this year with oil of oregano, a potent germ killer. This is the true wild oregano oil P73, a blend of edible spices of wild oregano grown on natural mineral-rich soils. Research published in the International Journal of Food Microbiology found that oil of oregano is an excellent germicide capable of killing a wide range of fungi and bacteria. Get it today by visiting thepowermall.com or calling 877-817-9829.
This is Jim Fetzer, guest hosting here on the Power Hour. I'm just delighted to be back with the Power Hour Nation. Where in relation to the death of Donald Rumsfeld, I'm explaining how he was complicit in the planning and cover-up of 9/11, which was orchestrated to justify American military intervention into the Middle East and a plan to take out the governments of seven countries in the next 5 years in order to because they served as a counterbalance to Israel's domination of the entire region. So that was the game plan. Now, what you may not know about 9/11 in New York is that the Twin Towers were erected in what was known as the bathtub. It was like a moat to protect from Hudson River water flooding beneath Lower Manhattan, the most valuable real estate in the world. So they had to devise an ingenious plan to take out the Twin Towers that would not lead to, you know, massive tonnage shattering the bathtub, which otherwise would have taken place. It was very clever. the design of the Twin Towers meant it was impossible for them to collapse. A retired high school math, physics, and chemistry instructor has even calculated that for every unit of downward pressure of the Twin Tower, there were 199 units of upward. They were, in fact, blown apart from the top down in every direction, which required a massive source of energy, converted into millions of cubic yards of very fine dust. There was, stunningly, no pile of debris in either of their footprints. Now, it's of a necessity when a building collapses that we wind up having a massive pile of debris. In fact, classically, it turns out to equal 12% of the original height. So, since the Twin Towers were 110 floors high, we ought to have had a stack of debris about 13 and a half floors had this been a collapse. But it wasn't there. What about Building 7? This was perhaps the most robust ever built by man. It was over two enormous generators to provide backup electricity for lower Manhattan. It was designed to never collapse. It actually was destroyed at 5:20 Eastern time, about 7 hours after the North Tower, and was the last of the WTC buildings to be destroyed. It took place in a classic controlled demolition. You see all the floors coming down at the same time. There's a little peak right at the top. And then when it's over, coming down at nearly the speed of free fall because all the support columns have been removed, you find 5.5 floors of debris, which is 12% of its original 47 floors. So they were done in completely different ways. Now, how was it carried out? Well, the U.S. Geological Survey studied dust from 35 locations. And remember, Building 7 wasn't being converted into massive quantities of dust. That was true of the North and the South Tower. They found elements that would only have been present had this been a nuclear event. Barium, strontium, lithium, lanthanum, tritium, some of which only exist in radioactive forms. Now, you've heard from architects and engineers and the like that nanothermite was responsible, but it turns out to be a scientific absurdity. It is a law of material science that in order to destroy a material, an explosive must have a detonation velocity equal to or greater than the speed of sound in that material. The speed of sound in concrete is 3,200 meters per second. The speed of sound in steel, 6,100 meters per second. But the fastest detonation velocity attributed to nanothermite is only 895 meters per second. In fact, you can't get there from there. DOES, or directed energy weapons, moreover, cannot explain the evidence, especially the U.S. geological dust study evidence. Here's a summary of the situation. Jet fuel fires, even if they burn hot enough and long enough, would cause the building to sag and gradually collapse. Jet fuel could not have ejected a 300-ton steel assembly up at a 45-degree angle 600 feet outward into the winter garden. To explode steel, an explosive needs to have a detonation velocity of 6,100 meters per second. To explode cement, a detonation velocity of 3,200 meters per second. Kerosene, the principal component in jet fuel, has a detonation velocity of only 1,600 meters per second. Nanothermite has a detonation velocity of only 895, but mini nukes would have had the observed effect. Meanwhile, cover-ups and misdirection. The renovation record for the enormous ACE elevator renovation have quietly disappeared. Palestinians were blamed as it was taking place. You may recall they switched to a scene of Palestinians rejoicing, conveying the impression it was contemporaneous. But Palestinians were just as slack-jawed and stupefied about what they were witnessing as the rest of the world. This was a classic Israeli trick to overdo it. Anything they can do to blame on the Palestinians, they are going to do it. We even had the absurdity of the Popular Front for the Liberation of Palestine calling in. Well, that was a fake call. That's all propaganda. Could 19 Islamic terrorists have faked the plane crashes at four different sites? I mean, look, half a dozen or more survived and were alive the following day. Osama bin Laden even turns out to have been our man in Afghanistan. What the government isn't telling you is that he was actually responsible for getting Stinger missiles into the hands of the Mujahideen, which they used to shoot down Soviet helicopters and planes. He was an officer in the CIA, Colonel Tim Osman. An official from the agency even visited in a hospital in Dubai shortly before his death on 15 December 2001. There were local obituaries. He was buried in an unmarked grave in accordance with Muslim practice. Even both Fox News and CNN reported Osama bin Laden's death on the 26th of December, 2001. Now, you may be astonished because you thought he died in the compound in Pakistan in 2011. No, that was political theater. Barack Obama found it expedient to have him resurrected and die again in a stage raid on a compound. It was all to position himself for a triumphal reelection as having got the most wanted man in the world. But it was all fantasy. It was all made up. Rudy Giuliani, I'm sorry to report, had 135 dump trucks lined up the next day to start hauling away the debris over the protests of the police and fire officials. Fire especially wanted an investigation to determine how it had been done. I would bet it would take a month or more to line up one dump truck in New York under normal circumstances, but Rudy had 134. Meanwhile, Israelis were arrested all over New York City. Here's a summary of what was going on. Well, those art students had a variety of tasks on 9/11, among them planting jammers on buildings to block Port Authority dispatchers and first responder from radio communications, planting explosives on the New Jersey side of the George Washington Bridge where the cables are anchored to collapse the bridge, explode a truck in the Lincoln Tunnel, explode a trunk in the Holland Tunnel, park trucks with demolition devices in specific parking areas around the Twin Towers. In other words, this was a very elaborate Israeli operation right there in New York City, where the New York police were absolutely dazzling in their ability to cut them off. So what's the big picture? The Islamic hijackers and Osama were patsies. Philip Zelikow, who was chosen to head the 9/11 Commission, who is now a professor of history at the University of Virginia, is my candidate for having authored the script for 9/11 and then bettered to cover it up than to be in charge of the commission investigating. Indeed, it turns out Philip Zelikow's area of specialization in the academy before he came into government service was, get this, the creation and maintenance of public myths, MYTHS. And that's exactly what he gave us. He completed a draft of the 9/11 Commission report a year before he shared it with any members of the staff. That ought to tell you something. Meanwhile, 9/11 legal actions have been bottled up by a Zionist judge named Hillerstein in New York City, where he really hasn't allowed any of this to go forward, Alvin K. Hillerstein, and where the principal parties who were responsible, Bibi Netanyahu and Ehud Olmert on the Israeli side, and then Donald Rumsfeld and Dick Cheney on the American. If you have any illusions, by the way, about Bibi Netanyahu, and you think he's a friend of America, here's a quote from Benjamin Netanyahu. America is a golden calf, and we will suck it dry, chop it up, and sell it off piece by piece until there is nothing left but the world's largest welfare state that we will create and control. This is what we do to countries that we hate. We destroy them very slowly. Bibi Netanyahu. Meanwhile, I published a relatively recent book about it, America Nuked on 9/11, compliments of the CIA, the neocons, and in the Department of Defense and the Mossad. You can find that actually even on Amazon.com, but also at Moon Rock Books, which I founded with Mike Palachek after my first book on recent conspiracies, Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, was banned by Amazon. Now, when we talk about Building 7 as a classic controlled demolition, that invites our attention to the Champagne Towers South. This was a building of slab construction that I understand was of a type that had a 40-year expected lifespan. It was erected in 1981, therefore 2021 would represent when you ought to expect its demise. The collapse started from the bottom of the central building, where the three main parts, a section behind the center, collapsed next. Then the east section of the building collapsed moments later. There's a pool deck, which engineers claim may have caved first, but in fact it survived all of this completely intact, had nothing to do with it. There was a report found that improper waterproofing beneath a pool, once again a distraction. There were other reports of cracking of concrete columns, beams, and walls in the parking garages. There are numerous photographs, and I'm doing studies about all this. If anyone wants to check out the latest reports, I've got a brilliant engineer who's qualified in structural engineering, civil engineering, mechanical engineering, and electrical engineering, with whom I'm doing a series of special reports. You can find some on my BitChute channel, Jim Fetzer, and also on my Need to Know programs. These are 5-day-a-week news updates and analyses where Joe Olson, by name, will be doing his latest update with me today. But go to the BitChute channel, because all those Need to Knows are also archived there. Meanwhile, anyone who looked at the video of the collapse of these buildings can see they very strongly resemble the controlled demolition we saw of Building 7 in New York City. And indeed, what I find very suspicious is that this other section of the condo that was still standing was demolished in record time. As Joe's explained, it can take weeks to set up and prepare the building. But instead, it was done in what, 36 hours? It was done in a matter of hours, not in a matter of days or even weeks. That's very suspicious to me, and even suggests it might have been prepped to come down with the rest of the condo, only something ran interference. Here's another aspect of this that troubles me profoundly. An Israeli search and rescue team has been brought in. allegedly flown from the Middle East. Now, here's my suspicion, and I grant this is only a conjecture, and I do not claim for what I'm about to suggest that it's more than an educated guess. It certainly doesn't have the certainty in terms of substantiation by the evidence of everything else I've been telling you about 9/11, but I suspect this Israeli team actually prepped the building. They were right here in Florida. They didn't have to be flown in from Israel. Who better than to be in control of the search and rescue? It's because they can conceal any lingering evidence of what actually happened if it was indeed a controlled demolition. So I'm very suspicious. Nothing has more greatly strengthened my suspicion than that that should be the case. Incidentally, I mentioned I would explain where you can find substantiation for everything I've been telling you about 9/11. Well, my dear friend Scott Bennett, who's a former Army Intel and PsyOps officer, has a new TV show called Great Awakenings on AmericaMediaPeriscope.net. AmericaMediaPeriscope.net. We did a three-part series on exposing the real story behind the 9/11 attacks. Episode 4 of Great Awakenings on the 25th of June. Then we did episode 5 further about it on the 30th of June. And then on the 2nd of July, Great Awakenings episode 6, we did a third program including Joe Olson and Mike Harris, who's a brilliant political analyst with a very broad background. So you can find it all there in 3 one-hour segments, or there's another presentation now linked. You can find it on the announcement for today's show on the internet at the website for Power Hour Nation, where I did a program on the 6th of September 2020, 9/11. What happened? Who is responsible and why? If you want it all in one dose, there it is, and you'll find documentation. I even show you the evidence for every claim I made about 9/11. You're not going to have any doubt about it. Now, for the 4th of July, I created a special about an interview with Bill Benny and Dr. Catherine Horton. Most of you are familiar with Bill Benny, the cybersecurity expert from NSA. Bill Benny, a very courageous man, he spoke out about the alleged Russian hacking of the DNC, which was complete and utter nonsense, pointing out that the download of the files had taken place at a rate far too rapid to have been distant hacking, and that it was done in the Eastern time zone, all of which substantiates that this was done by Seth Rich, who is an IT guy for the DNC, who is disillusioned because he was a Bernie supporter, and Debbie Wasserman Schultz, then the chair of the DNC, had sabotaged Bernie's campaign, even transferring some 13 primaries Bernie had won to Hillary's column to make it look plausible that he should have won. Well, what's remarkable, too, is that Bill Benny and Dr. Catherine Horton, who has a PhD in particle physics from Oxford, a completely brilliant woman who has led the legal charge against the use of these sophisticated weapons to torture targeted individuals. She and I had in the past done a four-part series on how to spot a false flag. So if you go to my blog at jamesfetzer.org, you're not only going to see the interview with Bill Benny and Dr. Catherine Horton, who gloriously have wed. They are now married. Talk about the use of these weapons to torture individuals, but you'll find the four-part series on how to spot a false flag right there. And included, as you go through it, you find evidence about the faking of the Boston bombing. I mean, it's embarrassingly bad. I have books on almost all of these false flags. I have not only on Sandy Hook, the Boston bombing, Orlando and Dallas, Charlottesville, Parkland, even the moon landing. All those books, by the way, have been banned by Amazon.com. So of the 12 volumes we have published at moonrockbooks.com, which Mike Palachek and I founded because we needed our own mode of distribution after Amazon banned Nobody Died at Sandy Hook, 6 of the 12 have been banned by Amazon. Really stunning stuff. And no one's reported it, not even this Operation Censored out of Sonoma State College in California. I was astonished. Mike Adams has been the best. When the book was banned, this occurred in 2015, he immediately did 3 different stories about it, including an interview with me. And I was just, absolutely flattered and impressed when he published it under the title "The Most Dangerous Mind in America on False Flags and Extreme Censorship." Well, I've done a great deal more since that original book, including about the Boston bombing. And in the process of all of my research, I've come into contact with many experts in many fields, including a retired professor of law, John Remington Graham, who, when I shared with him all the evidence we amassed about the Boston bombing, I asked what he thought was most impressive. And he told me that the backpacks don't match, that the backpack that Zucker and Tamerlan Serenov were wearing in footage that actually was photoshopped in to show them at the marathon did not match the 2 backpacks that exploded, nylon backpacks. Well, we submitted an amicus curiae brief, which John Remington Grant authored on behalf of me, Mary Maxwell, Ph.D., LL.D., and Caesar Haruja, M.D., which was submitted to the court, the Court of Appeals in Massachusetts, which they acknowledged and said they would take into account, but did not. And now we have submitted our brief to the Supreme Court of the United States, which has the Zucker case under consideration. Now, let me tell you what's going on here, where they seem to be seeking to suppress our evidence, which is conclusive proof of innocence, so that Jack has written to the acting Solicitor General of the United States, who, of course, represents the United States in cases before the Supreme Court. Counsel, our attention has been called to the recent administrative order of the new Attorney General calling for a review of pending federal death penalty cases. While things of this kind are typically punctuated by hypocritical partisan political theatrics, we believe that the case of Zucker Serenov deserves special attention because, as our amicus submission of May 5th, 2021, including appendix, points out clearly enough, the prosecution was political from the outset, including gross abuse of the First Amendment by major news media, which systematically suppressed obvious and decisive exculpatory evidence, while lawyers on both sides of the case acted improperly, pretending that such evidence did not exist at all, so that the accused was not prosecuted fairly or represented at all, and the death penalty was imposed for political reasons and the knowledge that the accused could not have been guilty. For your convenience, I attach extra copies of our submission and appendix of May 5th, 2021 for your review. I pray that this inhuman, ridiculous false flag masquerade come to an end. the first reform of the death penalty must be that intentional misconduct of prosecutors and court-appointed counsel for the accused, tacitly approved by judicial officers, together with uncivilized journalism of major news media, as we have seen in this case since April 15, 2013, should be eliminated. Before we settle limitations in which the death penalty may lawfully be imposed, it would help if we got rid of judicial murder. John Remington Graham, a member of the bar of the United States Supreme Court, admitted August 5th, 1971. Copies of Dr. James Fetzer, Dr. Mary Maxwell, Dr. Caesar Manuja, friends of the court, and Ginger Anders Esquire, court-appointed counsel for Mr. Serenov before the United States Supreme Court. If you were to look at our submission, you would find, and I'll go through it after the break we're about to hit, that includes photographs showing that the backpacks of Tamerlan and Zokar do not match. It's parallel to Johnny Cochran arguing if the glove doesn't fit, you must acquit, except Johnny Cochran faked it, set it up by having O.J. put on latex gloves to guarantee the glove wouldn't fit because it had a skin-tight fit. By putting on the latex, he fabricated a negative outcome in this case. The fact is the evidence we're presenting exonerates Zokar and Tamerlan decisively. Photographic evidence reduced to the most basic elements. The backpacks do not match. We'll be right back.
We've all heard about antibiotics, but what about probiotics? Antibiotic means against life. Probiotic means pro-life. Antibiotics kill bacteria that are infectious and harmful to the body. They also kill the good bacteria, though, that are necessary for good health. Probiotics from Living Streams replaces the healthy balance of friendly bacteria and normalizes the digestive tract. Gastritis, ulcers, diarrheal disease is just a few of the problems people develop when the intestinal flora is out of balance. Living Streams probiotics create the healthy balance needed for good digestion, suppresses growth of pathogenic bacteria, and actually increases resistance to infection. Call the Power Hour, 877-817-9829. Order your Living Stream probiotics today. They're available in 2, 4, and 8-ounce bottles, and Living Streams probiotics comes with a money-back guarantee. Get your body back in balance with Living Streams probiotics today. 877-817-9829. That's 877-817-9829. Living Streams probiotics. Everyone should be pro-life.
As you all know, everything begins with an idea. Ideas have helped shape the very world we live in. ThePowerMall.com began as an idea, allowing entrepreneurs and small business owners like yourself the opportunity to not only survive, but thrive in an era where corporations dominate. ThePowerMall.com is a small family-owned business who has partnered with companies you've come to rely on and trust over the years, like North American Urban Spice, Miracle 2 Soaps, Vitamir, Numana Food Storage, to name just a few. Fight back against large corporations when you buy from thepowermall.com. Need to speak to a real person? Call Jay at thepowermall.com and receive superior customer service. Call 1-877-817-9829 right now. That number again is 1-877-817-9829. Support small businesses and buy from the good guys at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com. Hi, this is Jay at the Power Mall. I thought I would discuss an item that's very valuable to my personal health and well-being. That product is called Curcumin X4000. Its potent antioxidant properties have been shown to decrease swelling and allow us to enjoy our golden years. Take control over your health today, guys. Order Curcumin by calling 877-817-9829 or order at thepowermall.com. That's thepowermall.com.